probably like 5 minutes or so before my heart rate decreases enough and I stop swallowing hard and all that to where it actually like makes sense and sound coherent. So maybe I'll read first and that'll help me get out of the way and for me to tell my story. But anyways, this is, I'm supposed to talk some about God, and I think it's kind of funny that I would talk about God, because if you had told me 4.5 years ago that I would, one, be involved in AA and be asked to tell my story in AA, I wouldn't have believed you. I didn't want to be here when I got here, and I didn't want to do the work, and I didn't want to show up, and I didn't really necessarily know that, like, that this was the answer, you know, and that I needed to get in touch with this higher power thing and all that. But I guess I'm going to read a thing that has meant a lot to me in sobriety, because I struggled with the God thing. And so this is from page 46 of the Big Book. And it says, "Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with Him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men." So, I think I'm a little less anxious right now, and I can start telling my story and tell you what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And I grew up in a wealthy family. My parents had money. That wasn't one of like the concerns. I have a older brother who's 3 years older than me, and a younger sister who is a year younger than me. And I'm a middle child, and some of you already know what that means. But I started drinking. I remember my first drunk. My brother's 3 years older than me, and one of the things that drove me and that I remember as part of my experience growing up was that I always wanted to be cool. And to fit in, and to, you know, I wanted to win your acceptance, and I wanted to feel that, like, connection, and I wanted to plug in, and I just, like, you know, I wanted this sense that I was a part of something, and I just, like, didn't have the tools to plug in, and so anyways, I was a lot of times doing things and being the class clown and trying to figure out a way where I could feel like a little bit of that, you know, just some of that connection. And my first drunk was, alcohol was around my house and my parents drank alcohol, and I knew that it was important and it was a part of all the celebrations and, you know, part of dinner time and everything. But I had a little bit of alcohol here and there, but the first time that I really got drunk was when I was 12 years old. And my older brother and his friend thought it would be funny, you know, if give me some alcohol. And he poured a whiskey shot, and I drank it. And he poured another one, and, you know, I drank it. And he poured another one. And, you know, I'm 12 years old, so these aren't, like, the biggest shots ever. I can't drink that much. But in my mind, I remember taking, like, you know, 10 shots. I'm sure that, you know, it was probably something like, 4, 3, you know. My mind exaggerates what the truth is. So I drink these shots, and I don't really remember. Like, some people, they tell their story, and they say, like, their first drunk was, like, the best thing that ever happened to them. But, like, I went, like, so quick into that, like, uncomfortable drunk where, like, the room is spinning, and, like, there's, like, nausea, and, like, I'm going to throw up, and I kind of like stumble like down some stairs, and like I'm trying to turn the alarm off, like, you know, so that I can let my brother's friend out, and I can't do it, and I'm kind of like scared at this point in time, like I'm getting like real drunk, and my uh, My brother says, take a cold shower. And I know that, like, I'm have, like, some characteristics of alcoholics, because when I hear, like, take one, like, it just registered automatically, like, three cold showers, you know. And I took three cold showers. And I took three cold showers that night and went to bed with, like, the room spinning. And I woke up the next morning and never had the thought, like, I'm never going to do that again. You know, and I don't know if that makes me alcoholic, but, like, it's a really good start, you know. Like, to have consequences from the first time that I did it and, like, to just be able to automatically, I mean, there was no effort involved, automatically just dismiss any consequences as a result of my drinking. That was actually something that my mind was able to do on numerous occasions, where bad stuff happened, but it just didn't register and it didn't click that somehow these problems are related to my using. And anyways, it would be a lie if I told you that I started drinking every day at the age of 12 years old. It's a progressive disease, and it started out, you know, that I was, you know, it started out, I smoked weed when I was 12, and I drank for the first time when I was 12, and it wasn't around that much for me, and it wasn't a part of my social scene that much until I hit high school. The summer before I went to high school was when I, like, really got on top of my drinking and drugging, and started hanging out with people that, you know, like, it was more socially acceptable at 15 for some reason than 12 to, like, get drunk on the weekends. And I started hanging out with, like, a few older people that were doing it, and it was, like, the best thing that ever happened to me at 15. Like, I loved getting fucked up. I mean, it was like, why didn't I start doing this more often when I was 12, you know? Like, this was, like, that way that, that connection that I was looking for, I felt like I had found it in alcohol and drugs. And, like, man, I could, like, be the person I wanted to be when I was out, and I could be the center of attention and, like, not be nervous, and, you know, I could, like, the acceptance thing, like, didn't matter as much anymore. And I hear, like, a lot of people, like, it's, like, that feeling of, like, less than, like, just kind of disappeared, and it didn't matter. And, you know, I would be a fool not to, like, continue to go back to do this as much as I possibly could. And, so I progressively get into things that I had, you know, previously in my life, like, I'm never going to do that. Like, I'm absolutely never going to, you know, like, I'm never going to do, you know, crystal meth or cocaine or mushrooms or acid or anything like that, because the experience of, like, smoking weed and drinking was just, like, so powerful that I was, like, willing to forego, like, you know, these, like, really strong commitments because of, like, how powerful it was and, like, how much of, like, I guess, like, I mean, what it did for me, you know? And so I'm, like, in this, like, progression of the disease, and I'm, like, 15, and I'm in high school, and I start, you know, like, I'm making good grades, but I'm, like, hanging out with, like, different people that are in my, you know, like, upper classes, like, I'm in the advanced classes, but, like, I hang out with, like, these different groups of people and try to fit in all these different subcultures that, like, you know, I'm still looking for that connection and still trying to find where I belong, and, like, I'm never really finding it in the groups that I'm, you know, seeking out. And I think I went through some, like, interesting phases. I was a punk skater, and I was a gangster skater, and I was a cowboy, and I was a hippie, and I went through, like, all these phases and, like, hung out with all these different people. And I mean, I hung out with the, like, you know, when I was a punk, I hung out with the gangsters, and, you know, like, we had our point of connection, like, the drugs and alcohol. Like, I could hang out with different groups of people, but, like, I never really felt like I found my people. And, like, man, I was sitting in the meeting last night, the speaker meeting, and I just, like, I was sitting in here and in, you know, the other meeting room, and I was like, man, I really feel like I found my people, you know? And, like, I have so much, like, compassion for the person who's sitting in here who doesn't feel like they really fit in here yet, you know, who's still kind of struggling with it. And before I worked the steps, I sat in here and I didn't feel like I was like really here and that I'd like found my people. But eventually I kind of like went through this process of listening to people and working the steps. And I really felt like this is where it's at, you know, like I am done looking for that subgroup in that other way and that kind of thing, and surrender that these are my people. So, anyways, I don't feel like I'm really like connected right now and like really in my story. I kind of feel like, I don't know, like I'm not collected and together. So anyways, bear with me. I'm hanging out with, these different groups of people and not really feeling like I fit in and trying really hard. And that was like one of the things, like I tried really hard and I was making good grades and part of that was motivated by the fact that I knew that if I made good grades, I would have my parents' attention diverted elsewhere so that I could do what I wanted to and in my free time. Like I talked about before, like I really wanted to, get drunk and loaded as much as possible and free up as much time, get my work done so that I could reward myself. I guess I'll kind of skip in because I want to talk about recovery, like what's happened since I've, been sober and stuff. I had a like chain of events that like really like kicked in high gear, like my alcoholism and drugs. I had a girl, that moved away and like, it was like the most depressing thing ever for me. She was the one and she moved away. That was the period of time when I drank daily and kind of like spiraled down from there and did all the stuff that I never said I was never going to do. Did a lot of stuff that I figured would probably be pretty hard to live with later on. one night was hanging out with some friends it was a night just like any other night. Like I went out with the intention of like getting completely obliterated like I did every other night and with the car keys because like that's what I did. I mean, I drove drunk all the time. Like I had my learner's permit and I drove drunk with my mom in the car. Like I drove drunk and that was like what I did. And I went out like one night and I was drinking Mad Dog 2020 and smoking a lot of weed. And we went out and I was like, we were gonna leave to go, score some more pot. There was like nothing out of the ordinary that night. Like it was just like any other night. We were like playing video games and listening to music, listening to Grateful Dead and drinking MB 2020, smoking weed. We went out that night and to go get some more bud, and I blacked out somewhere on the drive to go get it. And I had like two friends with me and one business associate, and I dropped all them off in a blackout, and then I have like a few hours unaccounted for. And then the next report of me is from a toll booth attendant who called the Houston Police Department and said, we have a black BMW going the wrong way on the tollway, and he's going like 100 miles an hour. And then the next report after that is 20 miles between there and the wreck. And I got in a head-on collision. And I figured that I was going probably like 60 miles an hour at least. Like I'm in a blackout. I don't remember any of this. Like this is all from like police reports. But I figured I was probably going like at least 60 miles an hour. And the other car was probably going 60 miles an hour. So it's like hitting a brick wall at 120 miles an hour. And like I really get this like idea of like borrowed time and like that. Like when people talk about like being sober and like getting second chances and like getting like to do it over again and like living on borrowed time, and that like, I mean, if God's not like shot all through that, like, I mean, I don't obviously know about God then, but I got a second chance. Like I, the people, There were two people in the other car. I was the only one in the car that I was driving, and those two people were hurt. And I woke up in the hospital the next day with a broken collarbone, and you know, like I wake up out of my blackout and I'm in a hospital, and my parents are on both sides of me, and they like tell me what happened. And that was like, that was the worst moment of my life, was like waking up in the hospital to that like bitter, incomprehensible demoralization, and like realizing that like, you know, I had done this thing and I don't remember it. And you know, like, I mean, there's nothing like looking your parents in the eye and like have them tell you, like, you know, you drove the wrong way on the freeway, and you hurt a couple people. So I did not get sober then. I was like, I mean, that's not alcoholic enough for me. My problem was not drinking, it was like drinking and driving. And I just had to figure out a way where I could, you know, like be out on, you know, out on papers and continue to do what I wanted to do. And I left that day from the hospital, and I had a, you know, a prescription for hydrocodone that I was gonna like fully utilize. And I left the hospital and was out on bail for a while, and continuing to use. And this was like more of my period of like trying to figure out the formula where I could like control it. And like, I knew that there were some things that were like out of control about it, and I had like kind of conceded to myself that like it didn't really work, you know, the way that I was doing it, and I needed to figure out a right way to do it. And I had to stop smoking weed because I was on probation, and that was like devastating for me because that was like a huge part of my life, and it did something for me that other drugs couldn't do and that I like really liked. And I mean, I'm like completely crazy. Like, this is the point at which the normal drinker like has some serious consequences because of you know, what they do, and they just say, I mean, I'm 17 years old when this drunk driving accident happened. This is when the normal drinker says, okay, like, I'm 17, I'm not of age to drink, I'm in serious trouble because of it, because of drinking. Like, I'm gonna stop at least for a while until I'm off probation and done with all this. But it says, I'm gonna read this. This is the only other thing I'm gonna read. But it talks about the difference between the normal drinker, the hard drinker, and the alcoholic in the big book. So moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it, like drunk driving accident. They can take it or leave it alone. Then we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have had the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome. And he may even need medical attention. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. And that was like where I was at. Like, I was in trouble, and I was just like delusional, you know, thinking like I could still make it work, and like I'm completely like, I've lost control, but I'm still trying to like make it happen. And so I get sober a year and a half later, and in between that year and a half, there are so many blackouts, and I'm taking Xanax and drinking, and like, you know, like I'm waking up out of blackouts and trying to assess like what I did the night before to make sure that I'm not in trouble, because I'm like out on bail, I'm facing 2 to 10, and you know, like, I'm drinking, obviously, like, I'm powerless and I'm unmanageable, and I, like, won't even recognize it. So, my senior, I get convicted, the week before my senior year in high school, and I go to, the judge, and I get, you know, 4 years probation, no license for 4 years, you know, community service, classes, victim impact panel. I mean, like, all this stuff, and then 30 days in jail. And so I'm supposed to, you know, wait. It's, like, right before my senior year, so they decide to have me come turn myself in after I walk across stage and graduate. And, you know, I make good grades, and I end up, like, graduating in the top 10% of my class, and I walk across the stage, and then I go and turn myself in a week later. And, you know, I go out for that last hoorah drunk, like, right before I go into jail, and, you know, end up, like, blacking out and waking up in a guy who's actually sober now, his apartment, who's was dealing drugs and, like, you know, like, just completely crazy. And I wake up in his apartment, and the next day go turn myself in for jail, and spend a month in jail. And the whole time I'm in jail, I'm dealing with this, like, obsession. Like, I want to get, like, drunk and loaded. Like, when I'm not drinking and getting loaded, like, I want to get loaded. And it's, like, something I think about all the time. And I get out, and it's, like, the first thing I want to do, you know, and I continue to go back and just do what I do, you know. And I'm going to college. I'm, like, so scattered right now. I hope some of this is, like, somewhat coherent. But I decide to go to college out of state because I figured that, you know, the state's going to let me do it on probation. And I figure they'll have less tabs on me, and I'll be able to do more of what I want to do, and have less drug tests and stuff like that. And so I go away to school to Memphis, and go to Rhodes College, and I'm at school there, and I'm, like, not drinking daily. Like, I'm thinking about it every day, and, like, I want to every day, but I know that I can't, you know, like, make it work with probation and school and everything like that. If I drink every day. And so I'm, like, doing school, like, Monday through Friday, and, like, Friday night I'm, like, making up for it, you know, and, like, wake up Saturday morning. And the pattern, like, at the very end of my drinking was, like, just, it was just, like, boring, but, like, the same stuff over and over again. Like, Monday through Friday, like, try not to drink, and then Friday, like, big blowout, and wake up Saturday with, like, the hangover that, like, non-alcoholics only have once, you know, like, where you wake up and, like, being sick and dehydrated is, like, only the beginning, you know? And I get, like, nothing done on Saturday, even though I have all these papers due and everything. And I think, like, for, you know, like, weeks on hand, the only thing I got done on Saturday was, like, my laundry. And I would, like, do my laundry and, like, be kind of, like, proud, you know, that I got my laundry. I wake up on Saturday morning, and, like, this is, like, the end of my drink. And I didn't even, like, realize this until I had 2 years sober. But, like, I kind of, like, spotted that, like, alcoholic pattern. And, like, as if the, like, accident and everything, like, didn't, like, show me enough. Like, I saw that on Saturday morning I'd wake up after Friday night drinking and, like, drank way more than I had planned on drinking and got out of control. And I'd wake up on Saturday morning and be like, I'm not going to drink tonight. Not like I'm going to stay sober for the rest of my life or anything like that, but just, like, I'm not going to drink tonight. And I'd mean it. And, you know, I'd get a little hydrated, and my stomach would hurt a little less, and I'd have that obsession working in my mind. And while the obsession was working on my mind, and I'd go drink Saturday night and just be like, oh, I changed my mind. You know, like, this is what I want to do. And I'd drink on Saturday night, and I would fully buy my own bullshit that was what I wanted to do. And so I'd wake up on Sunday morning, and it'd be the same thing, you know? And then I'd go through the week, and I'd just do it. And it wasn't, like, any, like, you know, big thing, like, you know, that happened that, like, really brought me down, like, so much. I did have one night where I'd blacked out, and I think I was in this dorm where I used to date a girl. And so I think I was probably trying to get back with her, but I got found by a resident advisor who found me in the girl's bathroom peeing. And I guess I was, like, kind of sly even in blackouts, because, like, I knew that guys stand up to pee, obviously, and girls sit down. And so when I got busted, I was sitting down peeing. It might also have been that I didn't have the best of balance at the time, but it was like, you know, she looked under the stall and saw some big dude feet, And she, you know, confronted me, and she said, you know, are you a student here? No. You know, are you going to tell me your name? No. You know, what are you doing here? Like, I don't know. And she's like, okay, well, I mean, if you're not a student and, you know, you're obviously drunk, you're in the girls' bathroom, like, you're going to have to be escorted off campus by campus safety. And, you know, she goes, and I'm that's fine, you know, let's do that. And she gets on the phone with campus safety and, you know, calls it in, and I take off running. I don't know. I do things like that are very uncharacteristic of me when I am drunk and loaded that I don't do when I'm sober, like that. And the problem is that I am unable to, like, call it quits, you know, and, like, come to that point where I'm like, all right, I'm good, you know. I'm, you know, taking pills and drinking, and I'm just, like, going for more and more and more. And there's that internal, like, I guess, like, judgment call or whatever that I think normal people might have. I don't have that. And so I do things like that. And I woke up that next morning, and it's funny to tell the story now. It was not funny when it happened. And I woke up the next morning, and I was in trouble for, you know, lying. I was going to go for the honor council, and I was convinced that they were going to tell my probation officer. And, like, I had a good lawyer, and I got off real easy for intoxicated assault with a vehicle. And I was like, man, they're going to throw the book at me. Like, they're going to tell the, you know, Texas what's going on from, you know, Tennessee, and I'm going to go to prison. And so I woke up that next morning, and, like, I walked the hallway bathroom to throw up, and this guy told me what happened and what I did, and, you know, he was laughing about it. It wasn't funny to me. But he was laughing about it. And I went back to my room, and I conceded to my innermost self that I was, like, going to prison. Not that I was an alcoholic, but that I was going to prison. And I don't know, too boyishly cute to go to prison. And I wouldn't have done well there. And I was having lots of problems with anxiety too, and so I'm seeing a therapist about that, and we're not talking about drinking and drugging. Like, I don't know how I can, like, you know, go to a therapist and, like, address some problem and not talk about this, but I'm not talking about it, you know. So I go, and, you know, I go to, like, a next session or something, and she says something about, you know, like, I end up bringing it up, and she says something about, I guess, like, her experience. And she had an experience where she used to follow widespread panic, and, like, that was who I was at that time. And, you know, that was the in-group that I was in. And that she had had some trouble and, like, took care of herself. And, I mean, really general way, kind of shared her experience, Strengthen Hope. And it kind of implanted the idea that, like, maybe I could do something different, like get sober or something. And I wasn't ready to do it yet, but it just, like, it planted a seed. You know, and some people are at the conference and, like, man, they're not ready yet, like, but it's planting a seed, and I really believe that. So I'm still trying to make it work, even after this, you know, encounter and